Why do humans hold on to stuff? Oddments we don't use and yet can't quite throw out. It's not just you and me. Australia's oldest library is crammed with stuff that isn't books. Terrible paintings, old menus, human hair. Is this history or hoarding? I'm Annabelle Crabb. Come and have a rummage through the story of us told by our stuff. Search for the History or Hoarding podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Let the horny people fuck.
Now I crave someone who agrees that our sole romantic partnership is with each other.
Non-monogamy is not for the weak.
Having a monogamous relationship to me does feel like you are creating something with a trusted co-creator.
A clash of two lifestyles is before us. A battle of how to love, a duel, a contest, a shootout, monogamy and non-monogamy. Which is the better choice for health, happiness and orgasms? Yep, it's time to debate relationship styles.
Non-monogamy has been kind of trendy in recent years. Data from Relationships Australia, published back in 2022, found 6% of Australians had been in an open relationship. That's quite a lot. And anecdotally, it's something that I see more and more people catching on to and exploring. Monogamous couples pick their person and, in theory, commit to being with them at the exclusion of all others. Ethically non-monogamous, or ENM, couples can come in different configurations. Some might have a core relationship and have sex with other people outside of that, while others might date and have relationships with different people at the same time. So is human happiness made from building a faithful otter nest with one friend and holding hands while floating through the flotsam of life? Or does frotting and frolicking with a farrago of partners, dolphin style, lead to a higher porpoise? I'm Yumi Steins. Ladies, we need to debate. Is monogamy really the way to go? To solve this monogamy versus ENM debate once and for all, I have two excellent women here with me. Arguing in the case for monogamy is actor, writer and comedian Nikki Britton. Nikki was on an episode called What Men Need to Know About Sex. She's a veteran dater, former romantic and now jaded single woman, deeply in love with her dog who she lives with in Sydney. Hi, Nikki.
Hello,
Yumi. Hello, darling. In support of ethical non-monogamy is sex and relationships therapist Alex Trakulia. Alex is also a dear friend of the show, practices ENM herself and works with couples navigating the joys and challenges of non-monogamy. Hi, Alex.
Hello, Yumi.
So we have some different personalities in the room with different approaches on love. Nikki's going to start us off arguing in favour of monogamy.
Thank you to the Honourable Adjudicator, Yumi Steins, here today. I've really prepared some arguments here, which may suggest that I do like following rules. I don't know if that helps or hinders my argument today. Firstly, who has the time? Alex, how much time do you have? I take great pride in having lived a life as long as I have, and yet I could still count on one hand the number of times that I've opened a new Excel spreadsheet, and I would like to keep it that way. At some point, love starts to look less like passion and more like project management.
Look, it makes sense. Our girl Nikki is busy. You may have noticed her playing Amber in season 2 of one of the greatest TV series this country has ever created, Deadlock. So, of course, she's too busy for more admin. But sex therapist Alex Trakulia says E&M to her isn't all the columns, rows and complicated mathematical formulas that Nikki imagines.
Team, I'm so happy to be here today to have this discussion. I would also like to speak to the observations you've made, Nikki,
please,
around
please.
Where you observed, are you potentially rigid? Because yes, you are on team monogamy. You also wrote and printed out an opening statement, and I turned up and said, hey, does someone have a piece of paper for me to write some
correction?
Ideas now?
Does anyone have a post-it note?
So this really speaks to the fluidity within which I move through life, which I think is also then a good argument for why I'm probably the right person to be on this side of the debate. Sure.
Alex is choosing to start her anti-monogamy argument with a statement on the human condition.
To be human is to err. Mm. And yet, why do we expect perfection from monogamy? As a couples therapist, I will say that's like the number one issue I'm working with is infidelity and betrayal. Monogamy is actually a construction of patriarchal institutions and frameworks that ultimately act to subjugate a lot of people, mostly women. And I would say as a bisexual woman, me in particular, which leads me to my point of let the horny people fuck.
Oh,
you know, like why limit ourselves? Why limit ourselves? Is it potentially just a form of repression that we go, why are we pretending we're not attracted to other people?
And I mean, that's already so sexy.
So sexy.
And that's everything I wrote down on my post-it note.
There's another point Nikki feels passionate about expressing in this battle, and it's actually kind of romantic.
I don't prefer monogamy just because most institutional systems and laws and structures are built around two-person partnerships. This is what has led us to the oppressive and frankly criminal model of the per-person twin share holiday. But I have actively and passionately expressed and enjoyed my freedom, sexual and otherwise, and I have had wonderful periods of my life where I've slept with multiple partners, sometimes in the same day, but I just called that being single in my 20s and parts of my 30s. But now I crave love that is stable and consistent and accepting, someone to share goals with and to join in celebration and commiseration, and someone who agrees that our sole romantic partnership is with each other and choosing each other over and over again. We deepen our connection. And maybe that is boring or vanilla, but in identifying that and changing to this new value and striving for it, is that not radical self-love?
Ladies, as we go further into the duel between monogamy and non-monogamy, I need you to visualise something. The hotel buffet. Can you picture it? It's a series of benches with beautiful white tablecloths and fancy silverware, and the whole thing is heaving with abundance. Not all of it is food you enjoy. Maybe the eggs are a bit rubbery. Yes, there is something inherently pathetic and sus about mini muffins. Hash browns are 100% a criminal enterprise, and that bread is clearly not artisan, but there is so much choice. The buffet is everyone in the world you could potentially shag. To choose monogamy is, in theory, to abstain from said buffet, but to perhaps admire it from afar.
You walk past that buffet, you look at everything.
You breathe it all in.
Ooh, you have a little sniffer. Get right down into it. And you order room service.
You order the room service. And I think one of the points that Nikki's trying to make, Alex, is that by choosing that one person over and over again, you do deepen the connection.
I would argue a lot of the issues that we face is that people get lazy. They get so lazy in monogamy. This idea of building the appetite, coming back to the one you love, I agree with you. Some people can be like, yeah, the buffet smells great, but I want room service with my partner. But I would bet my money that most people walking through the buffet are going to have a little tasty taste.
Our two opponents disagree on how to build one's sexual appetite. But on the whole, to be a human is to err thing, Nikki gets Alex's point.
I do see your point about making sure, you know, people are being open and honest within monogamous relationships. Mm. That's not been something that has always been successful. I have kind of interrogated why I fall on this side of the argument. And I just think it's not just about the sex for me.
Mm.
I think there's something for me at this point in my life exciting about being on the adventure with someone. And the constraints and restrictions actually, for me, I think would make that not just deeper in the relationship, but even sexier, even kind of edgier and more exciting to just be with the one person. You are talking to someone who's really slutted it up for most of their life. My personal stance is monogamy is the new exciting adventure that I am yet to really journey into.
For Alex, her preferred relationship style is all about being flexible with one main squeeze. She's not into polyamory, which is having multiple serious partners, something she's very clear about.
From the very beginning when I date, I tell people, hey, this is the kind of non-monogamy I want. I want a primary partner. I want to be romantically attached to that person. I do want to have sex with other people, mostly together. I don't want romantic connections with other people. I just want it with you. That is what non-monogamy looks like for me.
For Alex, E&M is a little bit like sampling some of the more succulent flavours in an ice cream shop, but loyally ordering a double scoop of her favourite flavour to take home.
I don't believe in limiting myself unnecessarily. I can be emotionally intelligent enough to understand flirting with this person, kissing this person consensually, isn't going to threaten my romantic long-term relationship. I know that. I just want to kiss a hot person and enjoy a fun erotic moment. That's my argument. Like, a human being will get hungry and want a little bite of the cake. I think that's in our nature.
But Alex, can you tell us what are the limits? Like, is it possible to define what flirting looks like and know when it crosses from flirting to cheating?
You can ask 10 different couples, and one couple will say, oh yeah, flirting is if you smile at a stranger across the bar and you're flirting with them. And then it's like, well, does that count as cheating? Some people might be like, yeah, absolutely. Why are you smiling at someone else? Other people will be like, I don't care who you smile at. And it's so subjective based on our own upbringings and conditionings and what's been normalized, I guess, of how maybe strict the monogamy looks like in people's relationships. I actually think it's more like you just have super, super monogamous people and it's like a spectrum of like then you just move toward non-monogamy.
But I would say from the point of view of where I'm coming from, the definition of monogamy, all of that would still be under the monogamy umbrella. Like even cheating, I would be open to having a partner who maybe did eat at the buffet.
Yeah.
So I guess what we're saying, is we're on the same page.
Oh, my God. The debate's over.
Okay, Nikki. Wrap it up, Yumi.
No, it's not that. No, just kidding. I'm joking. I would lock my husband in a safe. I would put him in there and not let him look anywhere at anyone else ever.
Yeah, I think, but I get your point, right? I get that actually for some people, monogamy includes the space for cheating and mistakes to happen. And
I mean,
then
it wouldn't be ideal. Like ideally we would say, no, thank you, no.
We don't want that to
happen. But if it were to happen, I would like to have a fully rounded conversation about why, what led to that and how it is we might be able to work through it. And I think that's what I'm talking about with this new adventure of monogamy is it's a consistency. It's a choice to be with that person. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about having a stable foundation where it is just the two of you.
Yes.
And from there onwards, like, we choose just each other.
Yeah.
And this is if there was anything else to happen or another desire, that is a full redefining of our relationship. But I choose the first version of that for as long as possible.
Okay, so I guess my other argument is that exists in non-monogamy. Like what you're describing of having like a primary partner.
Guys, your umbrella's pretty big is what I've got to say.
Well, your umbrella's really small. It's not my fault.
I feel like my umbrella's bigger than you think. I feel like our umbrellas are crossing over.
Yeah.
Okay, can I just jump in? Because the thing is, Nikki, the umbrella that you're holding, which is the size of one of those cocktail...
Yes, it's a cocktail umbrella, girl. Yeah.
Made out of paper and little toothpicks. But a lot of people are under that. Like most of the human race believe that they're monogamous or that they would be if they were partnered. So sell it to us. What is the appeal of being tucked into this confine with somebody knowing that you are never going to be able to shop around and get your legs spread by some other hottie?
Mm. Yeah.
Right? Grim.
Is it?
Is it?
I don't think that's grim. I think it's different. Mm. I think that's a different kind of adventure. I think that expands you in a different way.
Part of Nikki's argument for monogamy comes down to, quality control. She is yet to find one man who fits her brief, let alone a whole rotating roster.
I'm looking for a decent, stable man, an emotionally available man, a man who does not subscribe to Joe Rogan. This journey has taken me to far-flung places across the globe and across the spectrum of the human heart, and yet I am still left wanting, because where I dream of respectful conversations and a warm embrace, I am met with crypto and skid marks. And you are telling me that you can find multiple decent humans out there. That's not dating. That's a miracle.
So for Nikki, finding one good person to cuddle up to is hard enough. Why would you challenge yourself to find multiple people? And Alex concedes that the search for one good partner is really hard for her too.
I'm 34. I'm single. I've struggled to actually successfully navigate non-monogamous relationships with men, where they're often the ones that kind of go, this is too hard, can we close the relationship? And then it becomes not what I signed up for. And I think that the limitations to dating are shared no matter what relationship framework you're looking for. It's just challenging.
Alex warns that E&M is not, and I repeat, not the solution for a struggling relationship.
I'm actually meeting a lot of monogamous couples that come to therapy and go, should we open up our relationship because we're not having enough sex? And I go, that's actually probably the worst idea that you could have right now.
Right.
Because what it acts to do is create distraction in a relationship and ultimately act as like a band-aid solution to their own sex lives. Like they're not addressing the, I guess, core issue in their relationship.
Do you need to be profoundly secure in yourself and in your relationship to allow for this openness of relationship?
Non-monogamy is not for the weak. Like you have to be ready to talk more than you actually do like hooking up or connecting with others. It is so much admin.
Work.
But one way to really emotionally expand yourselves is to explore what it's like to navigate connections with other people whilst also remaining somewhat committed to each other. That's really challenging. And I think challenges naturally help to develop relationships and people full stop, right?
Alex says she helps couples who are considering opening their relationship to process jealousy. She tells her clients jealousy is not an emotion to be scared of.
They think it's really bad, but there's no such thing as a bad or unhelpful emotion. They all have a purpose. And in non-monogamy, one of the best things that can happen is people talk about the function of jealousy and what do we do when it comes up and how do we support each other and what do the kinds of boundaries look like when we notice that feeling coming up. It's almost like the more you live it and practice it and build the communication skills, perhaps the more secure you feel in actually navigating relationships of all kinds, connections of all kinds.
So you're out there dating, Nikki.
Look, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Not actively in the last couple of years. I am very happy with my dog and my house. And I don't like the idea that I might fall in love. And then him move in and then him having some kind of squatting rights and then the only asset that I have in my entire life being split in half and taken out from under me.
Okay, so our pro-monogamy debater is also somewhat anti-relationship. Awkward. Nikki's been seriously burnt by love in the past.
Like I was in a relationship with a man for a few months who lived in Perth. We were doing long distance and then I flew to Perth to meet up with him and we were at the airport and I got my wallet out to see how much money I had for the cab and he grabbed my wallet and ran away. I've never seen him again.
What?
Then there was the guy I went on a date with. We met in a park and he was like, oh my God, it's so great to meet you. I'm just parked in a no standing zone though. I'm just going to move my car. And he drove away and I never saw him again.
And then there's the guy who was non-monogamous without Nikki's knowledge or consent.
We were going out for 5 months, but he forgot to mention that he was back with his ex for the last month of it. I was like, okay, all right, sweet, no worries, boundaries. So it's like,
oh,
yeah, I don't know if it's me. I don't know if I'm the magnet.
No, you're not. That's not how
but
that.
There is, yeah, there definitely is trauma in my past for sure.
Alex also has her own bruises from past relationships.
I used to be in favor of monogamy because it felt like security. And then I had people cheat on me and I was like, wait, This isn't security.
Yeah.
But then I realized it's almost like exposure therapy where I was like, how do I feel safe when I know people are fucking other people? Do you know what I mean? Like it had
totally.
To really,
yeah.
I had to really like test that theory.
Yeah. After being cheated on, Alex started surrounding herself with people who made her think differently about what honesty in a relationship can look like.
I actually made friends of all bisexual and non-monogamous people. They often modelled to me the level of communication, the openness, the curiosity, and also like the safety practices. And I didn't have sex with them for like a year. I was just like, oh, I just want to, sounds weird, but like watch how they're doing this because it's confusing. So having people model these respectful and healthy non-monogamous dynamics was fundamental to me being able to see that I could do it myself.
Nikki, I just wanted to get an idea from you of what true romantic love would look like now at this point in your debate, but in this point in your life.
Mm.
For example, what's a beautiful Sunday with your lover?
A beautiful Sunday is waking up slowly, really lovely sex. My sweet baby angel dog comes in. We all have a snuggle, a giggle, a chat.
Mm-hmm.
Then we take him for a walk. We do basic, banal things. Maybe we go to a market, we do some shopping, we do some washing. Maybe individually we read a book that we're loving or we watch a show that we're both enjoying together. We're in each other's presence. I think it's about the atoms of our bodies vibrating together and in some way that giving each other more energy. Honestly, anything. In the presence of someone who wants to be there and whose energy brings me both excitement, enjoyment, but also profound calm.
Alex, what about you? What does your non-monogamous relationship weekend look like for you?
Okay, this wouldn't be every weekend, but I guess it's like Saturday night, we go for drinks with our other non-monogamous friends. Someone says, sex? And then we end up having group sex and then we're all laughing and giggling and drinking gin martinis and fucking. And then we go home, my partner and I, and we talk about how hot that was and then we have sex. And we sleep probably 8 hours because that would be ideal.
It's a lot of sex.
Yeah, and you need recovery, you know.
Sure.
Then we wake up and they bring me coffee in bed and they say, sweetheart, I made you coffee. And I say, thank you, so you should. They do this every morning. Then we go, hey, tonight we have board game night with our friends. So then we go play board games. And then someone cooks some kind of Sunday roast with gravy.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not wildly different.
They're not. There's a lot more fucking in yours, I think, Alex.
Yeah, but I don't think that would happen every weekend.
Yeah,
because there
are
some Sundays that I go away. I want to hang out with my girlfriends. I want to see my family. You know what I mean? Like it just varies, but that would be a pretty good weekend.
Two really great weekends. Okay, ladies, I have a secret and it's not really a secret. It's I'm not pro or anti-monogamy or any ogamies because I'm like completely asexual for now.
Sure.
And I think my sexuality is hiking in the rainforest with my friends and camping and staying far away from anyone trying to stick their tongue in my mouth or anywhere else. But that's just me. But because it is me and I am your adjudicator, there are no winners today and also no losers.
Hey!
Congratulations. Yay.
Debate was a patriarchal construct anyway.
So, so fuck debate.
Yeah.
Everyone just fuck the way you want, whether it's with heaps of people, one person, or in nature, all by yourself.
This podcast was produced on the lands of the Gadigal and Muwinina peoples. Ladies, We Need to Talk is mixed by Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. It's produced by Elsa Silberstein and Sarah Mashman, and our executive producer is Tamar Cranswick. This series was created by Claudine Ryan.